On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show. Stellar conversations to illuminate your journey. Engages some of the most inspired visionaries on the planet in lighthearted, lively dialogue. Join us as we explore the expansive nature of reality in a down-to-earth way, offering you insights and tools, empowering you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Now, here's your host, Christine Upchurch.
Welcome to the Christine Upchurch Show, where we have stellar conversations to illuminate your journey. I'm talking to you today on KKNW AM 1150. You may be listening on WBLQ in Connecticut, Rhode Island, or New York, AM 1230. You might be listening somewhere across the United States on cable radio network through your television or anywhere around the world on Transformation Talk Radio. But wherever you're listening from today, we're going to be talking about something that I think affects every single person and every single person who has either lost somebody or anticipates something that we just can't seem to get out of in this life, and that is losing loved ones to the other side. You're going to want to stay tuned because we're going to have a fascinating conversation today with somebody who has tapped in and done exactly that and has a way to help you to do that with your loved ones as well. But before we get into that, I'd like to say hello to my better half here in the studio who allows you to hear these wonderful conversations, Mr. Benny Mathers. Hi, Benny.
Hi, Christine. How's it going today?
Oh, it's going pretty well. You know, life's a little hectic right now, but that's, you know, it is what it is.
Well, I'm going to send you some good vibes and we'll smooth it all out for you.
That sounds good. And Yay. You're so good at that. And this is the end of your work week. And so I'm in the very last hour of your work week. And so I'm always amazed at how centered you remain, you know, doing all this multitasking and getting through your week.
So, Yeah, you're welcome. And I only top off my favorite part of the week. Of course, this is the last show with a bang. So there you go.
Oh, wonderful. You know, our guest today is Matthew McKay, and he has a background in clinical psychology. He's been a clinical psychologist for decades. And in fact, back in 1979, he co-founded the Haight-Ashbury Psychological Services in San Francisco. He served as its clinical director for 25 years, and he's not only a clinical psychologist today, he's a professor at the Wright Institute in Berkeley, California, and he's also the founder and publisher at New Harbinger Publications. But interestingly enough, Matthew went a different direction after something tragic happened in his life, and that new direction is going to help us, I believe, as individuals, to learn how to help with connecting with loved ones once they've passed over. I'd like to introduce Matthew McKay. Thank you so much, Matthew. Author of Seeking Jordan, new book out.
I'm glad to be with you, Christine. Thank you.
So, you know, in this book, you tell the story of what happened. And first of all, can you tell us who Jordan is, and what you mean by seeking Jordan?
Well, Jordan is my son. He was 23 8 years ago when he was on his way home from work in San Francisco, was attacked and shot in the back.
Oh, my gosh.
And he was, you know, completely out of the blue. He's young man and living a beautiful life, and some men were just simply looking to rob him, and it ended tragically.
How horrible.
After Jordan's death, I wanted to know the two things anybody wants to know who is has lost somebody they love deeply, and you know, that soul still exists, and is that soul okay? Are they happy where they are? So that set me on my journey.
Right. And, you know, even when we have deep faith about that, I think that when you lose a loved one, it always tests that faith. But to lose a child, I think that's probably the worst kind of loss a parent can experience.
It's absolutely the worst day of my life, and something I think all parents somewhere inside fear and hope against hope will never happen to them.
Right. So how long ago was this, Matthew?
It was 8 years ago.
8 years ago. So, you know, I imagine the grief and the anger associated with this were huge. How did you ever get to the stage where you were able to sort of shift and connect with him in a centered way? Because I imagine as a parent, there's a huge amount of grief, and somebody being murdered, your son getting murdered, I mean, that just seems so senseless. How were you able to get to the point where you were able to start to connect with Jordan?
Well, from the very beginning, I was just hungry to know if he was still there.
And right.
And for people who have a loss that's recent, that their pain and their grief is often just clogging up the channel that connects us to the other side. And
right.
It's very hard sometimes to hear from loved ones on the other side when there's so much emotion, so much pain.
Uh-huh.
And what often happens, and it happened in our case, is that a lot of our family and Jordan's friends were starting to hear from him in multiple ways, very vivid dreams, waking experiences of feeling his presence and getting messages from him. And we were astounded by that, but also we encouraged them to keep track of and recording all that experience. And it gave us, first of all, the beginning sense that Jordan was still out there, that he was connecting to people. While we weren't hearing from him because we were in too much pain, he was really desperate to try to reach us.
Yeah. And you have to wonder if, you know, so many people who passed over are feeling that kind of frustration and doing their darndest to get in touch.
I think that's an absolute fact. I think a lot of souls on the other side are doing their best to get in touch, but emotional conditions that affect us because we live inside these bodies with these very reactive nervous systems can really make it difficult for us to hear.
Yeah, yeah. So how did you eventually begin to listen and then hear him?
Well, the first thing we did about 7 months after Jordan died, we went to see psychologist Alan Botkin.
Alan who?
Alan Botkin.
Uh-huh.
And he developed something called induced after-death communication. And I'd read about it before Jordan died. And it's derived from a technique that helps people with PTSD, with trauma.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And I use that technique with my own clients, and so I'm familiar with it. But
Botkin, so you're talking about EMDR, is that right?
EMDR, that's right. Eye movement, desensitization, reprocessing. And Botkin made a small accidental variation of the technique with a vet who... Vietnam vet who had a great deal of grief about a young girl that he had befriended and who died in Vietnam.
Uh-huh.
And after the EMDR process with this small accidental variation, the vet actually heard from and had a full experience of the communication from that young girl.
Wow.
And he was just instantly healed from the loss, the pain, and he got a clear communication from her that she loved him, that she was grateful to him for everything he'd done, and she was okay. You know, and so Botkin didn't know what to make of it. He knew what he'd done differently in the protocol, and so he set about to see if this could happen again.
Uh-huh.
And he did a study with 83 vets, and he didn't tell them what to expect. They were just there to deal with trauma and the pain of trauma.
Right.
But they all had traumatic losses as well, and 81 of them, with this little variation of the technique, had after-death communications, full-blown after-death communications from people that they loved on the other side. So it was extraordinary. They were naive. They didn't know what to expect, and yet 95% of them had this amazing experience. So I was very impressed with that. I mean, it seemed like there was some science behind this.
Absolutely. And as a former research statistician, I really appreciate that he did not bias it by letting them know what he was, you know, planning on doing or you know, seeing if he could observe. So, that sounds really significant.
It was amazing. And so So we went, my wife and I went to Chicago to meet with him, went through the procedure, which involves kind of moving your eyes back and forth while visualizing the worst part of the trauma, just holding a picture in your mind of the worst part of the trauma.
Uh-huh.
And after two tries, I actually had the experience. I fully heard Jordan's voice in the room. It was absolutely as if he was standing next to me. The timbre,
wow.
The tone of his voice, the quality of his speech. He had very specific things to tell me, and also some very important and loving messages for his mom, who didn't have the experience, but he knew she hadn't, and so he had messages for her so that I could convey them.
Right.
And it was, the sense of this terrible grief and weight that I'd been carrying, while it wasn't gone, I felt a lightening of it. And
uh-huh.
And the two things I wanted to know is, does he still exist? And is he watching over us? Does he care about us, love us? And is he okay? All those things were answered by what he said. So that was the first step for me of just having that first moment of hearing from my son.
Uh-huh.
I still hungered to actually have a conversation with him, like we did around
sure.
the kitchen table a million times. But I at least heard his voice, and that led me to the next step of the journey to see if I could actually communicate in a more back-and-forth sort of way.
And we're going to learn more about that after the break, but this is a fascinating story, and I'm curious, Matthew, not only about the process and you know, to help others connect, but what Jordan has to say about the afterlife, about life's purpose. More with Matthew McKay here in just a few moments.
Serenity Bliss Holistic Spa is a complete approach to wellness. Serenity Bliss offers integrated therapies for whole body health. From facials to massage, from laser skin treatments to herbal wellness, from chiropractic care to energy healing. We work with teens who want to put their best face forward, adults of all ages who want to maintain that youthful glow, and anyone who wants to enjoy vibrant well-being head to toe. Serenity Bliss Holistic Spa is bringing the European approach to restoring natural beauty and wellness here to the Seattle area. Located on the east side, off the beaten path, yet just minutes from the freeway. If you'd like to experience the joy of relaxation, skincare excellence, and total wellness, then come experience your Serenity Bliss. To learn more or to schedule an appointment, visit SerenityBlissHolisticSpa.com. That's SerenityBlissHolisticSpa.com. Or call 206-229-0086.
If you're one of the millions of Americans suffering from anxiety, you probably know how powerless and out of control this emotion can make you feel. This is why it is so important to remember that anxiety is created by your mind, which means that you can learn to use your mind to uncreate it. Hello, my name is Dr. Friedman Schaub. My award-winning book, The Fear and Anxiety Solution, provides you with a step-by-step breakthrough process to understand and resolve the root causes of your anxiety and build a solid foundation of confidence and inner peace. If you're ready to take your power back, visit thefearandanxietysolution.com. That's thefearandanxietysolution.com or call 866-903-6463. That's 866-903-MIND.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
I'm Christine Upchurch, and this is a Stellar Reflections Minute. Years ago, when facing cancer, without any immediate treatment options, I sought healing by making various life changes. For a while, I followed a very restrictive diet. I often found myself obsessing about which foods were good and which ones were bad. Then one day, I realized I was consuming foods based on fear of not getting well. But I didn't want to make choices out of fear anymore. I decided it was far better for my immune system if I allowed myself to experience the joy that came from, say, eating frozen yogurt, than it was for me to ingest the fear that came from avoiding it. Now, instead of choosing healthy habits based on fear, I try to make choices because they feel right and ultimately bring me joy and ease. How many of your healthy habits are really based on fear? Please visit StellarReflections.com or call 425-999-9836. That's 425-999-9836.
Welcome back to the Kristen Epchurch Show here on KKNW and Transformation Talk Radio. I'm having a conversation today with Matthew McKay, who is the author of numerous books, including Seeking Jordan. And before the break, Matthew, we were talking about how you had this process that's a little like EMDR with some modifications, and you opened up to this, to the voice of your son. You recognize that he still existed, even though he'd been murdered several years before, or you know, several months before, and it kind of opened that up. So what did you do next to sort of continue this line of communication?
I really wanted to have a conversation with him. I wanted to ask, be able to ask him questions, and I'd try to connect to him through this induced after-death communication. I had heard from him. I had attempted to work with him or talk to him through mediums, but the problem was it was all one-sided, and I couldn't ask questions and get clear answers. So what I did, I consulted another after-death communication specialist, Ralph Metzner, and he taught me how to do channeled writing, which is also known as automatic writing. And channel writing has been around for thousands of years. It referred to an ancient text. There are amazing books that have been written via channeled writing. And it's actually, I found, and I hope your listeners may find, that it is very easy to do. And there are just a few simple elements to it that if you follow them, you often will get very profound results. You really will be able to hear from those on the other side.
So, Matthew, how do you go about this kind of channeled writing?
Well, the first thing you need is to get into a place where you feel centered, physically comfortable, safe. And you want to do the channeled writing always from that one spot, that place. And for me, it's the desk that my parents gave me when I was 11. It just kind of connects to me to them, connects me to a sense of my history. And so you have this safe, consistent place that you begin the work, the channeled work in. Next thing you need is something that will provide eye fixation. You need something that where you can keep your focal attention.
Uh-huh.
And candles work very nicely. I have a little candle behind a glass mask that my daughter brought me from Mexico. And I can keep my eyes fixed on the flickering candle. And when I light the candle, that part of the ritual, I very much intend the lighting of the candle is opening the channel. This is
right.
This is the symbolic step toward now. We're allowing the connection to open between us. The next thing you need is a physical object that connects you to that loved one on the other side, something that they owned
mm-hmm.
or something that they gave you. And for me, it's a little business card that Jordan had made up when he was in high school, and it says Jordan McKay, CEO, Omega Technologies. And he used it to get into tech shows and kind of pretend that he was some sort of a tech bigwig. And,
That's great.
And it reminds me of his humor and his audacity, and so it's just something that I bring that out, and I have that to also look at, and that is the object that connects me to him.
Right.
And then you need to do something to create a sense of receptivity. And there are different ways to do this. And believe me, there are quite a few different methods. I use basically a Vipassana meditation strategy, which is focusing on your breath, just watching the breath go in and out and counting each out breath. And when you have a thought, just bring your attention back to your breath. So you're just trying to hold your focus on your breath. And I do that until I feel like I'm open, I'm receptive, I'm ready. Now, other methods work too. You can use self-hypnosis, and I've taught people to use very simple self-hypnosis techniques that work very nicely for some people. Prayer can help. Anything that puts you in a soft, open, meditative state will work. And you just I wait until I feel that subjective sense that I'm ready, I'm open, I'm ready to hear from Jordan. The next thing you do is focus on that loved one. You know, you may focus on the image of that person, but I try to focus on what I feel like the essence of Jordan's soul, just the essence of him, and my love for that soul, and just holding that. And while I'm doing that, I'll also kind of visualize the opening of a door, like that. And again, that's the symbolic opening of the channel. And I'm with him. I'm feeling my love for him. I can sense who he is, and I'm opening the door. At that moment, you need to have a notebook or a piece of paper, something, and you literally and physically write down your question. What is that question that you want to ask your loved one? And it's very important to write it down. Channeled writing is about writing, and the act of writing is, it sort of frees you from your own conscious mind and allows you to just wait and get answers to questions. So once the question has been written, I wait a moment, and I continue to focus on Jordan and my love for him and the sense of an open channel. I keep my eyes on the candle, and I just wait for the first word or two to show up. Whatever shows up in my mind, whatever that is, I write it down and wait for the rest of the sentence. Sentence comes. Oftentimes there's more. There's additional sentences. And then I just wait till that stops, and then I write the next question and go through the exact same process and experiencing the answer. Sometimes the answer comes as a complete download. It's more like a complete knowledge that you then have to find words to describe rather than simple words in a sequence of sentence.
That makes sense, yeah.
But it can come either way. And but the key is to allow it to be there. And the other one little other piece is you're going to have doubt. And your mind is going to say, well, this is kind of baloney. Or, you know, are you just making this up? Or, you know, well, this is just your own mind. And that's okay. You're going to do that. That's going to happen. And so not to be discouraged when your mind produces doubt, but also to just allow the process to happen in the face of the doubt. Just let that be and continue to listen and continue to write down, regardless of what your mind judges or says about it.
Right. Just like what you do is in meditation, just to observe without, you know, the attachment to that thought. Yeah, that makes sense. And so you began this process, and what sorts of things were you asking, and what sorts of things was Jordan sharing with you?
Well, in the beginning, I was just asking, again, things like, are you okay? And what are you doing? What are you doing up there? and Jordan was, and in the very, and this, I think, your listeners may want to know, in the beginning, the answers tend to be kind of short and abrupt. Because it takes a while to get that channel open and to kind of be able to reliably get things coming through it. But I'd hear things back like, I'm learning. I'm with my, you know, where are you? Well, I'm with my friends, which of course means with his soul group. So I'd ask questions and get kind of a brief one or two sentence answers. But then when I start, and then I thought, well, maybe, you know, this is my chance, you know, he knows all about what's going on and what's on the other side and what the afterlife is like and why we come to Earth and why we go through this pain. And I began to realize that, you know, since we come here and we have amnesia, we can't remember anything.
Sure.
This is my chance to maybe know some things that I wouldn't ever be able to know otherwise. And so I started asking much more specific questions about the nature of our work as souls and what happens on the other side.
Yeah, and there's some fascinating answers, and I think very illuminating, but we have to go to another quick break. More with Matthew McKay and what Jordan has to say when we return here on the Christine Upchurch Show.
I need a sign to let me know you're here. All of these lines are being crossed over the atmosphere.
Get into it for 2016. Do you want more prosperity, clarity, energy, and balance in your life? Join Lynn Brown now through March for one of her amazing workshops, each focusing on a key part of living your best life. For more information and to register for one of these amazing workshops, visit lynnbrownevent.com. That's lynnbrownevent.com. And get into it this 2016 with Lynn Brown.
Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
This is Peggy Snow, practitioner at Stellar Reflections, with a Stellar Reflections Minute. So many people these days are trying to find ways to relieve their stress. What happens to our breathing when we're feeling overwhelmed and stress? When we tune in, we realize that we're either holding our breath or taking very shallow breath. To signal the body that all is well, which most of the time it is, sometimes all that is needed is a nice, deep breath to break the cycle. First, exhale to get all the stale air out by engaging the abdominal muscles and blowing gently. Next, take a nice full breath in, feeling it fill your body all the way down to your hips. Release fully and enjoy the freedom of movement. Notice how your body feels. Do you feel refreshed? Calmness is only a breath away. This has been a Stellar Reflections Minute. For more information about what we offer at Stellar Reflections, visit us at stellarreflections.com or call 425-999-9836. That's 425-999-9836.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
Wow. Hey, everyone. Welcome. Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By. I'm telling you, I got to pinch myself some days because when each of us gets called to do something that we so not thought was in our wheelhouse to do for a purpose that's so much greater than us, we get to show up and shine.
If you would like to show up and shine on the Dr. Pat Show as a co-host or sponsor, send us an email to inspire@thedrpatshow.com.
Welcome back to the Christine Upchurch Show here on KKNW, CRN, and Transformation Talk Radio. I'm having a fascinating conversation with Matthew McKay today, and he's the author of numerous books. He's a clinical psychologist, and his latest book is called Seeking Jordan. And Matthew, you know, you've opened this connection, this channel with your son who was murdered at age 23, and you go beyond sort of asking him, is he okay, and who you're hanging out with, and you started to ask him some bigger picture questions. What were some of the questions, and what does Jordan have to say about these things?
Well, I asked him, what happens when we die? I mean, what, of course, it's a question we all want to know, and there's actually a whole sequence of events that occur that he described to me. And first, of course, is just the landing. This is the, and we hear a little bit about this with near-death experiences, where people arrive in a place that's designed especially for us. It's a place where the images are designed to comfort and support a returning soul. And actually, these images, of course, they're energy. They're not matter, and so in that sense, they're not real. But they're designed to reflect the soul's sense of peace and of the familiar of things that they identify from Earth with safety and comfort.
Right.
Pretty soon, though, the soul is led to realize, and in that place, of course, we often meet guides, we meet loved ones who are greeting us and providing that reassurance during the transition. Pretty soon, though, we're encouraged to recognize that we are not in a physical environment, that we may have legs, but we're really not walking, that our nervous system is gone, and that we're experiencing things instead of seeing with our eyes, we're experiencing things 360. We can see, quote unquote, everything entirely around us. We have like eyes in the back of our head. We also, instead of hearing things, are experiencing telepathic communication. So our senses are gone, and we're having to get used to this. It's a little disruptive, and it takes time for the soul to kind of recognize that, oh, wait a minute, I'm in this different place.
Right.
From there, we go to some souls who've been really struggling, had a very difficult life, will go to a recovery center where they masters or guides are doing healing on their soul energy, and that may take a while. But if at some point, whether they go to that recovery center or not, they'll enter the process of life review. And Jordan talks about the life review quite a bit, and he talks about it as this experience in which you literally examine every choice you made in your life. Every single moment in which you chose your behavior, you chose what you did. You're examining that because the purpose of life review is to really see the outcomes. How do our choices affect others? What are the outcomes? What really happens when we choose things? And in a life review, we experience the outcome or the consequence of that choice for everyone around us, not just from our own perspective, but literally entering the experience of every other soul around us who was affected by that choice, feeling what they felt, experiencing whatever pain, whatever happiness, whatever their experience was in response to us, we experience that as well, not only at the moment of the choice, but actually into the future, so we can feel the impact of that choice over time. And we do this for all the choices we made in a given lifetime. So you can imagine this takes a while. You know, depending on how you've lived, it can be very arduous. It can be very painful to kind of look at a lot of things you did that were hurtful to others. And in other cases, there's a kind of a sense of comfort and validation that, you know, that maybe I did some good things that were helpful. Mm-hmm. In any case, there's no judgment.
That was my next question, because in so many of the religions and, you know, there's this concept of punishment or, you know, this negative connotation associated with karma. And I love the fact that there's no judgment.
Yeah, and that's what Jordan has told me, is that there's just loving appreciation of the soul's journey, of what that life was like and what that soul did. And even though some things turned out perhaps very badly, pain, but it's not bad in a moral sense. It's just noticing what happened and learning from that. And so the guides and those around us are all supporting us to face what happened. And maybe the worst thing you can do during life review is to resist the idea of failure. Failure's okay. It's not like you're a bad person.
Uh-huh.
You're not morally wrong or evil. There are things you did that didn't work out. And facing that and realizing that, and the key is to learn from that, because that's what we're doing, not only in this world, but in the life between lives, we are learning. And that's the entire purpose of a soul's existence, is to learn.
So right now Jordan is going through a learning process of a different sort. Instead of Earth being his school, it's the other side that is his school.
Yeah,
What sorts of things does he and others learn during that sort of interim phase?
Well, one of the things that souls learn about is methods of affecting change here on Earth, and they're called the laws of change. And they learn how to alter matrices of cause and effect, you know, and these are the things that really affect our lives. And they learn the laws of change are basically counter forces to cause and effect, and they allow us to make huge alterations in outcomes, doing things that are unexpected and having sort of the reverse outcome of what you expect. I mean, you know, when you think about South Africa, you know, the truth and reconciliation process was so different from what you'd expect from mm-hmm. people who had suffered so much. That was an example of a soul who came to Earth, Mandela, who understood the laws of change and who understood how to do something that actually shifts everybody's perspective in very dramatic ways rather than responding
right.
as usual. So that's one of the things they learn. And they also learn a lot about, they learn work that they do in Life Between Lives. They may have certain areas of specialization. Many souls in the Life Between Lives are counselors, essentially. They're guides who influence and help individuals here. You know, in Christian theology, we call them guardian angels. These are
uh-huh.
these are souls that are really helping us, particularly and individually, as we face challenges.
Right. So, does Jordan watch out over you and his mother and others in the family now?
Absolutely. And he's very, and this is true not just of Jordan. This is true of the souls who love us on the other side. They
uh-huh.
are watching over us. They haven't forgotten us, and they aren't on, you know, on some other plane and distant and uncaring. They actually have the capacity to watch us as much as we need them to, and they not only watch over us, but they whisper to us. They're attempting to communicate and support us, and sometimes counsel us.
Uh-huh.
And that's one of the nice things about channeled writing is you can open that channel and get much more direct communication rather than just getting it in the form of dreams or sudden thoughts that show up and wonder where that came from or where did that idea come from. It is a way of getting more direct information and counseling from souls on the inside. And Jordan is watching over all of us, and he counsels me. He helps me a lot, you know, when there are family issues, when there's a choice to be made. He won't tell me what the future is,
uh-huh.
but he'll tell me, you know, he'll give me wise counsel about, you know, what to do in the face of this particular challenge.
Interesting. That's fascinating. Before we go to break, I want you to share with our listeners what your website is, how they can connect with you, and sounds to me like you've got some sort of training process underway. I'd love to hear about.
Yeah, the website is www.seekingjordan.com. A lot of folks have things to say on the website, and there's some videos and things to tell more about Jordan, and also more of channeled writing that Jordan has provided that isn't in the book.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, so it's you know, it's ongoing. All these communications continue, and Jordan has more to say all the time.
Yeah, and that's great. And you know, when we return from the break, I'm going to want you to share with our listeners Jordan's perspective about having been murdered, and you know, and his connection with those who did this, and you know, I'm sure at this point he's got a very different perspective than those of us who are in human form. More with Matthew McKay in just a few moments.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Pat. The ancient Inca root vegetable maca is world-renowned for its wide array of health benefits. As a family-run company of true maca specialists, the maca team's mission is to provide you with fresh, organic, premium-quality maca powders at a fair price. Amazing.
All of the products are always organically grown, fair traded, GMO-free, fresh, and potent. So don't take my word for it. Experience the life-changing benefits of maca today. Visit themacateam.com.
I'm Christine Upchurch, and this is a Stellar Reflections Minute. For centuries, spiritual traditions have talked about how humans have an energy field, or aura, surrounding them. Although skeptical scientists refuted this for decades, science is now beginning to catch up with spirituality. Scientists can actually measure light emanating from living beings, so they can measure the human aura, which in scientific terms is known as the biofield. Many medical practitioners around the world use an instrument to evaluate a patient's biofield for the purpose of diagnosing illness. They understand that imbalanced or insufficient light in a person's energy field indicates a physical or emotional problem. The good news? There are ways to balance and increase your light, resulting in greater well-being. For more information, please check out stellarreflections.com or call 425-999-9836. That's 425-999-9836.
How would you like increased health and vitality? How would you like to avoid the onset of disease as well as slow the aging process? This is all possible through a simple, safe, and natural process. Every day, we are either moving toward wellness or away from wellness.
Hi, I'm Mary Jane Mack. I'd like to be your partner in achieving optimal health. Contact me now at MaryJaneMack.com or call 425-392-0659. Visit MaryJaneMack.com.
Have you been seeing numbers like 111 and 222 everywhere you go? Do you feel that the universe may be trying to get your attention, perhaps offering a message of some sort? As it turns out, numerical patterns and certain types of geometry form the very fabric of our reality, from cells under a microscope to the astronomy of our night sky. At Stellar Reflections, we offer special sessions which tap into these patterns, designed specifically to support you on your journey. The 111 and 222 activations are sessions activating new patterns in your energy field, which in turn can help you create new patterns in your life. After just one session with a practitioner, either in person or via distance, clients report gaining greater clarity, becoming more intuitive, and honoring their inner truth as they move forward in their lives. Curious about what these transformational sessions might do for you? Call 425-999-9836 or visit stellarreflections.com. That's stellarreflections.com.
Welcome back to the Christine Upchurch Show here on KKNW and Transformation Talk Radio. You know, before the break, Matthew, you were sharing some of the fascinating things that Jordan has been talking to you about relating to the other side. And one of the things I am curious about is here's somebody who's young, 23 years old, vibrant, you know, with the potential of a long life ahead of him. And he had, you know, three men, you know, come after him and had one of them murder him. What's his perspective on the way his life ended and the fact that it ended so, you know, so young? Does he hold grudges about that? Does he feel like there's something off or problematic about how things unfolded?
He doesn't feel that anything is off. He knew it was going to be a short life. He tells me. And my wife says, I must have been out of the room at the time that we all agreed to this, you know, in the afterlife, that he was going to have a short life. Yeah. And he also says that there are karmic processes that were involved in that in his death, meaning that the shooter, the man who shot him, actually was someone who he had been involved with in a previous life. He had a previous life that had a good bit of violence in it. He had been a bootlegger in a previous life.
Right.
And so he assured me that there were karmic processes, and he said that it's not a matter of getting earth justice. He says that's kind of irrelevant. Don't worry about it, Dad. What's important is karma. He says, and karma isn't punishment. Karma isn't like now you've done something wrong and now awful things are going to happen to you to make up for it. Karma is just the momentum of learning. It's that lessons are presented to us in each life. We come to each life to learn one or two particular lessons. And karma is our lesson plan. It's what we are learning and working on. And those lessons keep showing up over and over and over again until we figure out a different, wiser choice and wiser response.
It reminds me of parenting, how it seems like sometimes the most effective thing we can do as parents with young children is just allow them to experience the natural consequences of their choices
and to see
how that plays out.
That's beautiful. Because what he's saying about these men who attacked him is, don't worry. They're already experiencing what it means inside their soul to have created so much violence. He says it poisons your soul. It has this huge impact on your sense of well-being, on your sense of self. You carry the weight of violence. Every bit of violence you do in your life, you carry that weight throughout your whole life. He says they're already learning that karma is teaching them the impact of violence and what happens to you. And he says that's going on, and you don't have to worry about human justice. Those lessons are being learned. He has a very different perspective.
Yeah, but that must be so tough for you as a parent who probably wants that human justice.
I really don't. I don't have any need for those men to come to justice. He's assured me that karma is there. We're all here learning. Even the worst things that we do, even the most violent and horrible acts, we are here just learning. And rather than seeing these as bad or immoral or evil, they are just terrible mistakes that we make in the process as souls of learning how to live. And really, we come here to learn how to love in the face of pain. And it takes us a long time, and we're working on that over many, many lifetimes. So that process of learning how to love in the face of pain is one that those men are struggling with, Jordan struggled with in this life, you and I struggle with. And so it's not about being good or bad. It's not being judged or winning a place in heaven versus going to hell. It's just about learning, and that's all we're here for. And pain is not a bad thing. Pain is how we learn. We come into a physical environment to have pain so that we can learn things that couldn't be learned in the other life, in the spirit world.
So tell me a little bit more about that, because that's a fascinating concept, that pain isn't a bad thing.
Well, in the spirit world, there is no pain, and therefore there are things you cannot learn there. Pain is necessary for certain kinds of lessons. And, Jordan jokes with me, and he says, look, you cannot throw a curveball in the spirit world. You can't learn to do that because there's no resistance. There's no wind resistance. Uh-huh. There's no gravity. And so there's certain things that we cannot learn to do. And love, for example, is effortless in the spirit world. It all is about just actually, you know, telepathic communication. And love is basically what holds everything. It's the energy that holds everything together in the spirit world. Here, love is so hard. We have emotional pain. We have physical pain. We have a relational struggles and pain.
Right, and the things that we often call love really aren't love. And so we think we're getting something that's supposed to be, you know, fulfilling, and it's not.
Yeah. We have a nervous system that says, oh, that feels really good. I'm going to call that love. And it's something else. It's arousal, excitement. And so we have a lot to learn about love. And the things in the spirit world, we couldn't learn those things. And it's so we take a sacred journey here to this place of great struggle and pain in order to learn the lessons about how to love in the presence and in spite of enormous pain. And that's really the main focus here. So pain is not a bad thing, and it's not a failure, and we haven't screwed up when we have pain, Jordan says. We're just in the midst of a lesson.
That's wonderful. Now we come to Earth for these lessons. Do we come down sort of on our own and just it's kind of happenstance who we're interacting with, or is there a bigger plan here?
Actually, we come here with a very definite plan. And, you know, in the afterlife, once we leave Life Review, we join our soul group. And our soul group is a little repertory theater company, basically. It's our family. Yeah, it's our family of souls that we're very close knit with. You could think of it as like we all live in the same house, you know, metaphorically in the spirit world. And these are like, you know, 8 to 20 souls that we have had many, many lives together. And in each of the lives we share, again, taking different roles in that play, in that particular life play, we've had many relationships. Sometimes people in our soul group are teachers. Sometimes they're our brothers or sisters or our parents or our children. Sometimes they're lovers. Sometimes they're, you know, sometimes they're lost loves or unrequited loves. Sometimes they're our favorite bartender. the point is that these souls, and then these relationships keep shifting around. In past lives with Jordan, he has actually been my wife, which I found hard to comprehend. Then a life in which I was in a woman in a Pennsylvania Dutch country, he was an unrequited love. In another life, in the yeshiva, an education, Jewish education place, he was an older rabbi, and I was a young firebrand, and he mentored me. I mean, so we've had many different relationships over these lives, and that's what happens with soul groups, is that in the soul group, the relationships vary, but the purpose, we all come to Earth for a particular play that we sort of share in and have roles in, and the purpose of all of that is for each of us to learn. And each of us to grow and develop in wisdom. And then we take that wisdom, all of that we learned as individual souls, and we kind of bring it up to the afterlife and upload it to all, to the divine, to collective consciousness, whatever you want to call it, to God. And so everything we learn helps God, which is all of us, all of our consciousness together, helps God grow, develop, advance, and create more amazing and more beautiful universe. So, I mean, all of our learning has a sacred purpose. It's not to advance us as individual souls, but God learns because of us.
So you said the G word. What's Jordan's definition of God?
God is all of us. God is collective consciousness. God is all. Every thought, Every product of consciousness, ours individually and ours altogether, collectively, is God, is the divine. And as such, we all are part of that. We all participate. We all, at times, join into the collective knowledge and awareness of God. And at other times, we apparently separate as individual souls to learn and grow in a physical universe. So while we always remain individual, we also are always part of and joined to collective consciousness and to God. So we kind of resonate between the individual experience of a learning soul and the collective awareness of the great wisdom of all.
Mm. And that also means that for each of us as individuals, our path does matter. Our expansion, our learning does matter because it affects the whole.
That's exactly right. Everything we learn. Jordan's metaphor for it is like a beehive. So the individual souls, like bees, go out from the hive, collect nectar, which is knowledge, wisdom, learning, bring it back to the hive, which is all, which is the collective consciousness. And so our job is to go out, learn, and bring it back to the all. And the hive thrives because of all of the knowledge and wisdom we bring back. So, very simple process in a way.
Yeah, and that's beautiful because it gives us some purpose in terms of sometimes when life gets to be a struggle, I think that people can get stuck thinking that they're doing something wrong or that doesn't have any purpose, and yet it's all part of a bigger picture, which I think is a beautiful message. Matthew, this hour has flown by. I'm so grateful that here you are as a clinical psychologist, bringing something that would once be so alternative to more and more people. And I want to thank you for showing up in this way in your life and sharing your connection with Jordan and this process and Jordan's messages. So thank you, Matthew.
Thank you so much,
Kristen. And I appreciate you being on the show today. And Matthew's website is seekingjordan.com. And if you want to listen to this rebroadcast again, you can go to christineupchurch.com. And I thank you for joining us here today. It's always a delight. I know that we've got listeners from, last I counted, it was 67, 68 countries from around the world getting on to the archives. Thank you, wherever you are in the world, for joining us. And I look forward to talking to you again sometime soon. Bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey. Each week, this show engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information about the transformative healing work of Christine, visit www.StellarReflections.com. And for weekly topics, visit www.TransformationTalkRadio.com.